Today, on The Exam Room.
We're talking about a health condition that affects people. It disrupts their quality of life. It makes them feel unwell. And in that setting, to me, that makes it really important. And there are people, I think we're going to get into this, Chuck, of what is histamine intolerance? Who has histamine intolerance? The people who are listening to our show right now, they can listen to what we're going to talk about and answer the question in their own life. Am I manifesting the symptoms that Dr. B is describing? Because if so, the possibility of histamine intolerance exists. And we could talk about how you go about approaching that.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Want to say hi to the Exam Roomies listening in St. Louis, Missouri, Elk Grove, California, and Mogadishu, Somalia. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 33 of season 7, number 532 overall. Histamine intolerance. What exactly is it? What foods can trigger it? And what foods can alleviate those really nasty symptoms? Well, today we are diving into it with someone who did a lot of research on the topic, devoted a good chunk of his latest book to it, as a matter of fact. Dr. Will Bolsiewicz makes his return to the show today as we get into a disorder that affects far more people than we even realize. Some great insight is on the way from Dr. B, the gut health MD, from the Exam Room Live. Some good questions about histamine intolerance filled up the doctor's mailbag this week. Tammy, wondering why histamine intolerance can be so difficult for doctors to diagnose. Lori, wondering why fermented foods can be such big problems for histamine sufferers. And Samantha, curious about how nuts and seeds impact symptoms. Elizabeth, the good and bad of spices and condiments. Lauren, whether how you cook your food can bring some relief. Rachel is wondering about tea and coffee, while Tiffany was wondering about chocolate and cocoa. Plus, we also have some discussion about processed foods and why fresh is definitely best for those with histamine intolerance, plus fasting and histamine intolerance, and tips for when you go out to eat at a restaurant. So a lot to get into with the gut health guru himself, the pharaoh of fiber, the high prince of histamine. The one and only Dr. Will Bolsiewicz joins us on the Exam Room Live. Great to see you, sir.
Great to see you, Chuck. If you smell what the doc is cooking, oh dear, here we go.
Well, it is that season. You know how this is. I mean, people may not, or I mean, they know that about me. I don't know if you've come out as a wrestling fan yet, doc.
You know what? If I haven't come out, I might as well come out right now. I'm a wrestling fan, everyone else. I'm a wrestling fan.
And now you know why he's on the show every month. Just so when we're done taping, we can talk about WWE. But let's talk about histamine intolerance here. This is actually a really interesting topic. And I remember researching this toward the end of the year and talking to one of my doctors. And I said to them, talk to me about histamine intolerance. And they're like, I'm not even sure that it's a real thing. Is this a real thing, doc?
Yeah, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. And it's being increasingly recognized and accepted. And I think it's something that if we were to dig into the details of this, Chuck, it becomes readily apparent why there are challenges in bringing this to the mainstream, because we don't have a simple blood test or a breath test or a poop test or a CAT scan or an X-ray to tell us which of our patients have histamine intolerance. Yet, one of the most common conditions that exists in gastroenterology is irritable bowel syndrome. And there, to this day, you know, irritable bowel syndrome has existed since the 1970s. And to this day, there is no blood test, poop test, breath test, CAT scan that exists for irritable bowel syndrome either. We've been treating it for 40 or 50 years. It's literally like 20% of Americans. And there's no denying that IBS exists. I think that the issue, part of the issue with histamine intolerance, Chuck, is that we're talking about something more along the lines of 1% to 2% of Americans, not 20%. And that makes it a lot harder for us to identify who these people are and then to study them.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I could look at that and say, I got you. But 1% to 2% of Americans, that's still millions of individuals. And at a time when it feels like you can get a blood or a breath or a stool or a urine test for literally anything, it kind of blows my mind that there isn't one specifically for this or IBS at this point. Is it really like, is there just a threshold? Like, it's got to be at least 10% of the population before we're going to like really go deep on these research dollars and devote time, effort, and energy to this to come up with these tests.
Well, research dollars in itself is a complex topic. Because unfortunately, like traditionally, a lot of our money has come from government grants and academics would compete for those government grants. And the amount of funding for people in academia has been dwindling through the years. And so increasingly, the source of funding has to come from places like pharma. And pharma obviously is interested in studying the effect of drugs. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a health condition that affects people. It disrupts their quality of life. It makes them feel unwell. And in that setting, to me, that makes it really important. And there are people, I think we're going to get into this, Chuck, of what is histamine intolerance? Who has histamine intolerance? The people who are listening to our show right now, the good people that are with us, thank you for being here, they can listen to what we're going to talk about and answer the question in their own life. Am I manifesting the symptoms that Dr. B is describing? Because if so, the possibility of histamine intolerance exists. And we could talk about how you go about approaching that.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, if somebody just is wondering whether or not they, in fact, are histamine intolerant when it comes to food, what are some of the hallmark symptoms of histamine intolerance here?
Okay, so if it's okay, Chuck, I'll kind of take it from the top. And so taking it from the top, histamine. When we're talking about a condition, it makes it sound like histamine is this bad thing. It's not. This is an important part of your body. This is the way that your body works. When histamine is in the appropriate levels and in balance, it's an important part of human physiology, and it allows you to be the best version of yourself. The problem is when the body is exposed to excessive levels of histamine, and in this setting, histamine intolerance, we're talking about histamine that comes from our diet. So we think about histamine when it comes to like allergies. So for example, seasonal allergies, and we take an antihistamine, and that helps us. Or a person that has acid reflux or a stomach ulcer can also take a different type of antihistamine and help to heal that ulcer or help with that acid reflux. Histamine has effects throughout our entire body. And this is the part that's really important for people and the possibility of having histamine intolerance is that it can affect your entire body. So I'm going to run through some symptoms, but as I run through these symptoms, I want you to think about this in terms of, is this me? Because if you have two or more of these symptoms, then the possibility of histamine intolerance exists. And, you know, before I mention these, I just want to say real quick that like you could come to your gastroenterologist for bloating and simultaneously be having a headache and skin issues. And it turns out that they're all connected by this one root cause, histamine intolerance. But each of those doctors individually is just looking like the gastroenterologist might just look at your bloating and the skin doctor is just looking at your skin. And none of them connect the dots to say, hey, look, like in the big picture, here's this thing that's affecting your whole body. This is why we have to think about the whole body. So, all right. So from the top of our head to the tip of our toes, there's symptoms of histamine intolerance that can exist. Some of the classic ones involve brain fog, headache, migraine headache. You could have a runny nose, sinus issues, congestion, postnasal drip, cough, sore throat, voice changes. Moving down, it can cause palpitations or funny heartbeats, racing heart rate. It could cause lightheadedness, dizziness. And then from a GI perspective, can cause, the classic symptom is bloating. Bloating is the number one symptom that's associated with histamine intolerance. That doesn't mean that everyone has bloating has this issue. But if you have bloating and simultaneously you eat a meal and you get a runny nose, we may be onto something. You eat a meal and you get a headache, migraine, we may be onto something. So bloating, other classic digestive symptoms could be diarrhea, could be constipation, could be nausea. And then from a skin perspective, flushing or hives or other skin type changes can all be indicative of histamine intolerance. So you think about this whole body approach. If you have more than one of those things, then the possibility of histamine intolerance exists. That doesn't mean you've diagnosed it. It just means it's possible.
And how long does it take for someone to actually settle in on a diagnosis of histamine intolerance? Because as you said, even though you've got this list of symptoms, and if they all line up, there's a decent chance, but there is no definitive test with histamine intolerance. So essentially, histamine intolerance is kind of looking at you and saying, you can't see me, and it still takes that time. So how frustrating can this process be for the patient who is just searching for answers and they want it today, but it probably takes time?
You are a magician, Chuck. That was another WWE reference. Thank you for that, John Cena. So people who are considering histamine intolerance as a possibility typically are not thinking about these things the first time they go to their doctor. These are typically the people who are chronically ill and they're not sure why and they're not getting better and they're trying different treatments. They could be trying treatments for irritable bowel syndrome, yet they continue to manifest these issues. The reason why is because diagnosis is extremely important. So if we want to properly treat a patient, we have to properly diagnose them first. That's where this all comes in. Now, classically, you're not going to go to your doctor and have this be the first thing that you think of. You're going to work through a process of evaluating for other things. So if a person comes to me with bloating, there's an entire laundry list of possibilities that I'm thinking about that could cause bloating, many of which you and I have discussed on the show, Chuck. But at some point, like this possibility of histamine intolerance, that it's on that list. And it might start to move up the list based upon what you tell me. You start telling me that you're having headaches. You start telling me that you're having brain fog or funny heartbeats or sinus congestion or a runny nose after a meal. Those are things that would make me start to really, that's interesting. Makes me really think about histamine intolerance. And when you come to this point of, could this be histamine intolerance? You do need a test. The issue is that the test is not a blood test or a poop test or a breath test. The test is a low histamine diet. So what you do is you remove high histamine foods from your diet for a period of time, typically on the order of 2 to 4 weeks. And you see what happens. And if all of these symptoms, bloating, headaches, skin changes, runny nose, if they all start getting better when you implemented this low histamine diet, that is consistent with a histamine intolerance. Now, you still need to make sure it's not something else, but that would be consistent with histamine intolerance. That's how you arrive on this diagnosis.
All right, let's talk about what foods might be coming off of the plate then as you're going through that elimination phase. Donna wondering if there are specific foods that are more likely to trigger histamine intolerance.
There are. So histamine is, first of all, a natural part of our body. Second, it's a part of nature, and it's produced by microbes. So like bacteria have enzymes that take an amino acid called histidine. They take histidine and they're able to convert it into histamine. And that makes it actually the natural part of the life cycle of our food, Chuck. So if you were to take a food and basically allow these microbes to do their work on that food, they will start to convert this histidine into histamine and histamine levels start to rise. So with what I just said in mind, first thing that you need to think about with histamine intolerance are fermented foods. So naturally, fermented foods involve these microbes using their enzymes to transform and change the food. I've talked about this many times on the show. People who have histamine intolerance have sensitivity to fermented foods. That's not necessarily just sauerkraut and kimchi. It could be vinegar. It could be alcohol. It could be sauces that you're using that have some sort of vinegar or other fermented food in them. An example, I had someone recently who told me that they were having issues when they ate mustard. Check the package on the mustard, Dijon mustard. What do you think it has in it? What makes it so tart or acidic? The vinegar, right? So first of all, fermented foods. Second of all, fish and shellfish are classic for histamine intolerance. Why would that be? Because the fish is caught. They basically fillet it or whatever they do. And then it sits there on a bed of ice. And meanwhile, there's microbes. And those microbes are transforming the histidine in the fish and creating histamine. So fish and shellfish are a classic source. Now, in the plant-based world, the good news is that most plants are completely fair game. Most plants. But not all. And there are some classic offenders. Spinach, avocado, tomatoes, and eggplant. Those are the four classics. There are some others that can cause trouble too, like citrus foods or strawberries. There's a few others. The point is that the majority of plant-based foods are completely fair game. What you need is a list of here are the foods that you should be avoiding while you're on a low histamine diet. And that list would include everything that I just mentioned. Alternatively, having a list of the foods that you can prioritize, which are basically the things that are not on the first list, that's also quite helpful. Chuck, I don't know if you knew this or not. I think we've talked about this, but just in case, because I think it's quite relevant to what we're discussing here. This was a very big part of my second book, The Fiber Fields Cookbook, which I have a copy up here. So The Fiber Fields Cookbook, part of what I did with The Fiber Fields Cookbook is try to give people food intolerance protocols. I'm not saying this to try to specifically plug my book. I'm saying this because I think that this is a great starting point for people who are interested in this topic, because everything that I'm mentioning, these lists of which foods to eat, which foods not to eat, which medications can cause trouble, which spices can cause trouble, all those things are included in this chapter. And then also all of the recipes are completely 100% plant-based and low histamine. So the beauty of it is that if you need to test yourself for histamine intolerance, you can quite simply eat from my cookbook in the chapter about histamine intolerance. Do that for 2 weeks, see how you feel. That would be the way to do this.
And we've got a link to the cookbook right now. You can pick it up on Amazon or hop over to your local book retailer and pick that up as well. But that link is for you right now in the show description or in the episode notes. You were asking talking to us specifically about plant foods, but what about somebody who's just plant curious, or maybe they're listening because they think somebody in their own life who is not eating a plant-based diet may have histamine intolerance? We'll take a question from Jennifer, who's wondering whether histamine intolerance can be aggravated by meat or fish.
Yes, it definitely can. Thank you, Jennifer. It definitely can. So there's an interesting thing. Let's talk about fish for a moment. This is part of the proof that histamine intolerance exists. The way that we manifest histamine intolerance is that we have a sensitivity to histamine in our diet. Right? So hopefully that's clear at this point. But there are some of us that don't have histamine intolerance, don't have a sensitivity to histamine in our diet, and yet we can develop histamine toxicity if we eat bad fish. One of the things that I talked about in the Fiber Fields Cookbook in this chapter, it was one of my favorite parts when I was writing the book, Chuck. I came across this story from Sweden. In like 2020. So it was like during the pandemic, and there were these outbreaks of people getting ill. I'm not obviously laughing about people getting ill, but the story behind what was happening was quite curious, because people assumed that this was the pandemic, that this was COVID related. It was not. None of these people had COVID. No one ever tested positive. What it was they isolated it to specific restaurants. Then when they isolated it to the specific restaurant, they isolated it to a specific meal. It was the fish. They were eating bad tuna. Seriously. They were eating bad tuna. Because again, what happens is that the fish gets caught, harvested, and left on a bed of ice, not necessarily frozen. And those microbes that are, you know, basically while that fish is sitting on ice, they think that they're delivering fresh fish because they never freeze it. but those microbes are basically producing histamine on the fish. So then you could be a completely healthy person. You could have no issues whatsoever. You eat this fish, this bad tuna, and you get super sick. And these people ended up in the hospital, nausea, vomiting, like violent vomiting. And these symptoms that I'm describing, imagine like all of them going off at once, headaches, runny nose, cough, racing heartbeat, flushing of the skin, rash, gut symptoms, diarrhea, vomiting. Imagine all of that at once. That's what was happening. And they call this scombroid poisoning, which I think is kind of an appropriate name. Scombroid poisoning.
That's an interesting story, man. I had not heard that. That is fascinating to me.
So this is like proof of concept that histamine in our diet can trigger symptoms. Okay, so that's an undeniable truth. Everyone agrees that histamine in our diet can trigger symptoms. The question is, can you become more vulnerable to histamine in your diet where normal amounts of histamine that most people can tolerate could actually, on a more mild, less intense level, trigger similar types of symptoms as a result of histamine? And the answer is yes. And Chuck, the reason why this happens, there can be genetic predispositions. That's part of the story. But why are we hearing more and more and more about histamine intolerance these days? A big part of this has to do with gut issues. When a person has a damaged gut, they have a broken gut barrier. Now, some people would call this leaky gut. I personally prefer to call it increased intestinal permeability. But basically what that means is that the barrier that is supposed to protect us and separate what's in our intestines from what gets access to our bloodstream is porous. It's broken down. And so as a result of this, more histamine is able to cross and get into our bloodstream, and that's why it causes these effects. The key here is the broken gut barrier.
And along those lines, Melissa is wondering whether histamine intolerance can be related to other underlying health conditions.
I think that there's this root cause that exists that, well, okay. So two things. Number one, I just said that leaky gut or increased intestinal permeability predisposes us to developing histamine intolerance. We get more vulnerable. That's a root cause. And when a person has a damaged gut microbiome and increased intestinal permeability, this isn't the only potential possibility. As we've discussed many times on this show, you could have digestive health issues, irritable bowel syndrome, you could develop acid reflux or Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, chronic constipation. These are GI issues, right? They all are the result of a damaged gut microbiome. But we could go outside of the gut, and we could talk about other manifestations of dysbiosis or a damaged gut that affect your metabolism or your immune system, such as allergies and autoimmune disease, or that affect your hormones, or that affect your mood and your brain health. The gut is this command center for human health. And when it's damaged and broken, we're more susceptible and vulnerable to disease and conditions like this, including histamine intolerance. So that's number one. Number two, there is an enzyme that exists in the finger-like projections inside our small intestine. We have these little finger-like projections called villi. And the villi have our digestive enzymes. If you damage the villi, if you beat them up, they're not able to release the normal amounts of digestive enzymes. One of the digestive enzymes is called DAO, diamine oxidase. And if you have inadequate levels of diamine oxidase, you can't break down the histamine in your diet. And this can happen in people that have injury to these villi, such as people that have Crohn's disease, or people that have celiac disease, or people that are taking certain medications, such as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, that cause injury to the villi. So those are things to think about.
All right. That's all very interesting stuff. And, I think that there are a number of people who are wondering also, it's like, well, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. You're talking about histamine here. So why can't I just pop a whole bunch of antihistamines after eating spinach or something like that and feel okay? What's the difference between, I guess, a Claritin and what it is we're talking about today?
Some people who have histamine intolerance will take antihistamines like Claritin and say that their symptoms do improve. But the problem is that you're going to ultimately put yourself onto a drug that actually isn't fixing your problem. It's covering it up. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Relief from symptoms is important and it matters. But then what happens when that Claritin no longer works because you didn't address the problem in the first place and it's getting worse? What we want is we want to make the diagnosis, histamine intolerance, and then ultimately we want to implement a plan that's going to allow you to heal and restore your gut barrier. And in doing that, make it so that you can eat whatever you want. High histamine, low histamine doesn't really matter because you have healed your gut barrier. And in healing your gut barrier, you're able to actually consume the food that you enjoy. And then you don't have to restrict yourself. And then you don't have to take the Claritin anymore. So that, to me, there's nothing wrong with Claritin in itself. What's wrong is the strategy of, I'm not going to try to address the root of the issue. I'm just going to take this pill and that can reduce my symptoms. And therefore, that's my strategy. By the way, Chuck, there's something kind of cool about following a plant-based low histamine diet, which is what's in my book. And that is that if you were to think about, okay, so Dr. B is saying that we need to heal the gut barrier. What heals the gut barrier? The answer to that question is fiber. Fiber in our diet comes into contact with our gut microbes. And those gut microbes release short-chain fatty acids. And short-chain fatty acids allow us to restore and repair the gut barrier. They are the essential piece of the puzzle. So the beauty of this is, if you're saying, okay, so Dr. B, you're basically telling us that like we need to heal the gut in order to properly fix this problem. How do we do that? The answer is you eat a plant-based low histamine diet. And then as your gut heals, because by it being plant-based, you are inherently consuming a lot of fiber. As your gut heals in the process of doing this, you're going to find that your sensitivity to histamine is diminished. It's a beautiful thing.
That is interesting. I like that. And to that end, Samantha wondering that if somebody is starting from scratch, they clearly have histamine intolerance, whether nuts and seeds may impact histamine levels and the symptoms that they're experiencing. You mentioned that most plant-based foods are safe. Nuts and seeds fall into the green category?
This is a great question, Chuck. And off the top of my head, I have to reference my book. Is it okay if I grab my book real quick? And
by all means, my friend. That's okay. What the shelf behind you is for.
I got to turn myself around.
Oh, and here. You're wired. That's all right. Let me just give play-by-play for the people who are listening. He literally got up out of his chair, reached behind him onto his brand new shelf. He's in a new studio, picked up a copy of this Fiber-Fueled Cookbook.
Yeah. And the reason why I do this is because it gets complicated. So when it comes to sorting these things, these types of things out, I like to make it simple. Don't try to memorize. Just have a trusted resource that you can turn to that's going to show you the way. So here we are, chapter 5, Hope for Histamine Intolerance is what this chapter is called. And by the way, the chapter has, I believe, 22 low histamine plant-based recipes. So it gives you all kinds of variety and choices, and it is delicious. So, all right, here we go. Foods to avoid during a histamine restriction phase. This is page number 133 of this book. And the issue is that, unfortunately, many nuts are, in fact, problematic. So that will include walnuts, cashews, and it also includes nut milks, by the way, Chuck. So that's something to be aware of.
And is the peanut included in there, being that a peanut is not an actual nut?
The peanut is not actually included in there, but you do want to be careful with dried legumes. So typically what I recommend, and this is actually in the book, it's already the next page, page 134. Typically what I recommend is that you pressure cook your legumes. By pressure cooking your legumes, it helps you actually to reduce the histamine content. And typically there'll be more well-tolerated when you do that. Can I tell you something that's kind of interesting and fun about all this?
Of course.
Okay. So many of you know, if you follow my work, that I have for many years been a fan of sprouting. And so now, classically, if you think of me and sprouting, you're probably going to think of broccoli sprouts, because in Fiber Fueled, there was a chapter where I talked about broccoli sprouts and how I think they're so great. And they have these unique phytochemicals, one specific one called sulforaphane, that is being studied by Johns Hopkins to help to protect us from cancer. Okay. So it turns out that sprouting is more than just concentration of phytochemicals. Sprouting can create things that are like almost borderline medicinal in nature, which is fascinating, because earlier, if you recall, you asked me, okay, so like, what are the ways in which a person develops histamine intolerance? And I said, number one, the gut barrier. I said, number two, damage to the villi, those finger-like projections, which affects the enzyme DAO, diamine oxidase. This would suggest that DAO enzyme replacement could work, could help, right? So this is a possibility. DAO enzyme supplements, there's no pharmaceutical. DAO enzyme supplements do exist. The problem is they're crazy expensive. And they're also derived from pig kidneys, which makes me a little bit uneasy. Like, I don't really love that. I would prefer that they were not. I would prefer that they were plant-based. Well, guess what? There's a great, inexpensive plant-based alternative. It turns out, Chuck, that in the process of sprouting legumes, the legumes produce diamine oxidase. So if you sprout peas, for example, they will start to produce DAO, the enzyme that you're looking for. And they've actually studied this, and there's an interesting hack or trick that you can use if you get into sprouting and you want to do this, which is that you sprout your legumes in the dark. Have you ever heard this, Chuck?
No. Unless we've talked about it on the show and I've completely forgotten about it, I don't believe this has ever come up.
Okay. This is the concept of hormesis. Plants that are put under stress will produce more of their essential phytochemicals, many of which are beneficial for human health. So if you take a plant and you subject it to, for example, colder temperatures, that plant will produce more polyphenols, right? So in this particular case, we're taking the plant, we grow it in a jar, that's what sprouting is, and we subject it to the absence of sunlight. And that actually stresses out the plant. Don't worry, the plant's going to be okay. But the beauty of it is that plant will now produce more of this diamine oxidase. And when you do this, specifically with peas, peas seem to produce the most. If you do them in the dark and you sprout them, you can produce substantially more DAO enzyme than you would get from the DAO enzyme supplements that are so expensive.
That is fascinating science right there. That is like, that's the cool, man. Again, I gotta say, if they would just teach science like that back in class, kids would not skip nearly as much as they did. I was notorious for skipping science class. If you were the teacher, I would have showed up every day, Dr. B.
Thank you, brother. Well, so the interesting and cool thing about this is that, like, sprouts, they're cheap. I think they taste good. I like them. You don't have to cook them. In fact, if you were to cook them, you actually want to eat them raw, because if you were to cook them, it would reduce the DAO enzyme. But they're wildly inexpensive. They're very easy to do. And you can have these pea sprouts in a matter of 3 days, 4 days, and have like a huge jar of these pea sprouts that you made for 25 cents, 30 cents, something crazy. So high in protein, high in fiber, high in vitamins and minerals. We're talking about a health food that also simultaneously provides what your body is missing, which is the DAO enzyme. This is an amazing and powerful thing. And what I recommend doing is just quite simply eating them with each meal.
Sprout them and eat them. Sprout them and eat them, everybody. Talking about cooking methods here, I want to go back to you were talking about legumes, and if you pressure cook them, it seems to help out. Angela is wondering if there are other cooking methods that can also help to reduce histamine levels. Say, Angela made love spinach. Is there any way to cook the histamine out of spinach?
Well, okay, so we want to think about the way in which spinach becomes high histamine. The reason that spinach is high histamine is that you're buying it at your supermarket and it's been sitting there. That's the reason why, Chuck. If you were to grow spinach in your backyard and harvest it, you'd have no issue. So
Break that one down for us. Why is that? What happens in the growing process that can change the histamine levels that much, or the way that our body reacts to it that much?
It's not the growing process. It's what happens after you harvest the food. So much like the fish, where the fish, you catch the fish, you fillet it, you put it on a bed of ice. While it's sitting on that ice, there are microbes. And those microbes are actively working to convert histidine into histamine. This is where the histamine comes from. It's not implicit in the fish. If you caught that fish, that same tuna, and you ate it that day, next day, no problem. You would be completely fine. There would be no scombroid poisoning in Sweden. The issue that came up was that there was too much time between when the fish was caught and harvested and when the fish was actually consumed. That was the issue. And the same is true for spinach. If you were to catch spinach, that's kind of funny. If you were to go out to your garden and clip some spinach, in that moment, it would not be a high histamine food because you haven't given it the time for the microbes to actually transform and produce the histamine. So anyway, all right, page 127 of my book, and I'm not, again, the reason why I'm doing this is because for people that actually have this issue, I want you to have a resource. That's my point. You can borrow the book from your library as far as I'm concerned. I just want you to have this resource that I think can really help you. All right, so let's talk about general pointers. The question is from Angela, are there certain cooking methods that can reduce histamine levels in your food? So this is a section that's right here on page 127 of chapter 5 of the Fiber Fields cookbook. So I'm just going to read it to you, Chuck, if that's okay.
By all means.
You good with story time?
Story time with Dr. B makes me so happy.
Yeah, this is what I do with my kids before they go to bed at night. We read stories.
Read on, man.
We're just getting extra nerdy today because it's about histamine intolerance in the Fiber Fields cookbook.
I'm just going to sit on the floor, with my legs crossed, if you don't mind, and read away, sir.
All right. General pointers to avoid higher histamine levels. Okay. General pointers. Here we go. Number one, eat fresh food whenever possible. Most fresh fruits and vegetables are totally in play. Number two, perishable food has the least histamine at harvest, and histamine levels will rise from that point forward. Okay. So whatever it is, if it's perishable, when you harvest it, that's when you want to eat it. Fresher, the better. Number three, cooling down slows histamine production. Freezing slows it even more. So if a product is frozen immediately after harvest, think about like blueberries. If you harvest the blueberries and you freeze them, this protects against histamine release. All right, number four, all fermented foods are high in histamine. Sorry, like chocolate, alcohol, vinegar, love them. But if you have histamine intolerance, you gotta take a break. Let's heal your gut. All right, number five, alcohol is a fermented food, so is chocolate and vinegar. Sorry. Okay, and I'm sorry for repeating what I just said. You can tell the way my brain works. It's consistent. Number six, try to avoid canned foods, ready meals, and processed perishable foods. And finally, number seven, high heat, specifically frying and grilling increases histamine levels. So cooling is better. Frozen is best. High heats like oil, frying, grill, that's how you really crank the histamine up. You don't want to cook that way.
All right, let's grab a couple more. That was fascinating stuff right there. Chocolate lovers are really just sobbing. I can hear the weeping right now as we speak. Rachel, though, is wondering whether coffee can be as detrimental as that cup of hot chocolate. Is that a big trigger for histamine intolerance?
Coffee can be a trigger for histamine intolerance, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that because it's slightly fermented as well?
Yeah, it is.
Gotcha. Same with tea, or does tea get a pass?
Tea can be an issue, but the key here though is that what you do is you go on a low histamine diet, you establish the diagnosis. Okay. Once you know that this is what you're treating, now you have the option to start to add things back as tolerated. So if you start adding back tea or coffee and you do completely fine, you're good. You don't need to worry about it. Okay. If you can add it back and you're fine, you're good. You just got to find what works for you.
All right. Let's get a practical advice here. Question. Emily, how should someone who's about to go out to eat with friends or family and they have histamine intolerance, what advice can you give for them when they're going out to eat at a restaurant? It sounds like that could be kind of a tricky scenario for a lot of people.
Yeah, it can be. And I think, like, first of all, I think actually in this context, eating no oil, because you don't want fried food. So you want to make sure that you avoid the fried food or the grilled food. You want to be aware of what are the foods that are high histamine. You're not going to be able to say to your, you know, sometimes there are some places that you can go where you can say, I'm lactose intolerant. Okay, they get that. I'm gluten intolerant, or I have celiac disease. They might get that. They might get that. You still got to be your own advocate. This is a place where you have to be your own advocate. So in a perfect world, the way that you approach this, Chuck, is you check the menu before you go out to dinner, and you already know before you go which thing you're going to order. And the way that you do this is quite simply, once again, you pull up the list of the specific high histamine foods and you check that against what the menu offers for you. Don't eat the bad tuna.
And don't eat the bad, whatever you do, for the love of Pearl, don't eat the bad tuna.
For the love of Pearl.
Or just don't eat the tuna for 99.999999% of this audience. Anyway, Isabella, can fasting or intermittent fasting be helpful for managing histamine intolerance? Can the symptoms just disappear if you're not eating, period?
Well, so histamine intolerance is the result of histamine that exists in our diet. If you are fasting, by definition, there is no histamine in your diet in that moment. So generally speaking, that is to your benefit. The other thing about fasting or time-restricted eating is that we do believe that there are benefits to our gut and to our gut microbiome. In a way, we are allowing our gut to rest and reset. And to me, the like most important rule of all of this is not the number of hours that's magical. I think that's actually quite highly individualized. I think that the one rule that is clear and true for all of us is to avoid late night eating. So basically, we all want to stop eating by 8 p.m. That should be a hard rule for all of us. That includes alcohol, by the way. I realize I've said that alcohol is a no-go in low histamine diet. So hopefully you're avoiding that nonetheless. But what you want to do here, Chuck, is you want to try to have an early dinner. And then like the beauty of that is, let's pretend that you have your dinner before 8 p.m. Then by 8 a.m. the next day, it's already been 12 hours. So you're in a great spot. You can perhaps extend that a little bit further. But it's not about like trying to extend it as far as you can. It's about just giving your gut a nice solid 12 hours of rest.
There it is. All right. So the keys here: as fresh as possible, nothing fermented. And I'm assuming here that the fermentation in the alcohol is the key. So if somebody's like, no problem, I'll just reach for a Heineken Zero and be okay, that's not going to work out in their favor?
That is not going to work out in their favor, I don't think, no.
Sorry, my friends. Yeah. So freshness is the key. Load up on sprouts. That's a great option. And pressure cook your legumes. That matters. Soaking. Let's end with this. Soaking. I know that when it comes to FODMAPs, soaking certain things can really help alleviate a lot of symptom triggers. Does that pertain also to histamine here?
You're not going to hurt by soaking. But you can't take a high histamine food such as walnuts, soak them, and then believe that this is now a low histamine food. It doesn't work that way. So you're not hurting yourself to do this with, for example, your legumes, your nuts, things like this. But at the same time, again, I think that you want to basically, particularly when you're going through the diagnostic process, Because the diagnostic process is about solidifying and understanding what's going on with your body. You want to be able to make the diagnosis of histamine intolerance. That's your goal. Flip side, once you make that diagnosis, now we're in a reintroduction phase. We don't want to stay on a low histamine diet. We want to bring these foods back on board. And what you want to do is you want to find out how much you can tolerate. So, and much like many other things, Chuck, there's a variable level of how much food you'll be able to tolerate. So if you start low and go slow, you can reintroduce these foods over time and find out exactly what is the amount that your body's able to handle.
Yes, man. You're like Brett Histamine Hart. The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. I love it when you're on the show, my man. And of course, we talked about the Fiber Fueled Cookbook as a great resource. You also have classes on histamine intolerance up on your website right now, theplantfedgut.com. People can go there as well.
Yeah, I think that the issue, like one of the motivations for me is that, because first of all, let me tell you, I've never received so many kind emails from people over one chapter in any of my books beyond this chapter. And the reason why, Chuck, is because these are people that felt seen and also they derived benefit. It helped them. So this is why I'm proud of this particular chapter. But the issue is that these are people who are starving for trustworthy resources. And if you don't know where to turn to understand this condition and how best to approach it, you need something. And the chapter is a great starting point for the foundation and the basics. It's a 101. But there's going to be some people that want to get into the more advanced classes, 200, 300 level classes on histamine intolerance and how to actually manage it within your life. That's why I created my histamine intolerance course. So the histamine intolerance course is for the people who want to go beyond the book to really get into the details of how to approach this specific issue.
And you see the web address right there on your screen, theplantfedgut.com. Go ahead and sign up. Get schooled. Get that 200 to 300 level education if you are so inclined. If not, click that link to pick up your copy of the Fiber Fueled Cookbook. Dr. B, as always, man, you truly are just an amazing human being. I love being able to step into this virtual ring of health with you and lay the smackdown on whatever the topic is this week, histamine intolerance, man. I really appreciate you chopping it up with us.
Chuck, thank you so much for having me on. I feel like I was scoring points with the histamine intolerance content that I was putting out into the world. But when it comes to the wrestling references and the wrestling content, you're the champion, man. You're the weight loss champion. You got the belt, baby.
I appreciate you. We will talk to you again next month. Everybody, be sure to check him out, theplantfedgut.com. Histamine intolerance course. Check that out, the Fiber Fueled Cookbook. That's the man right there, Dr. Will Bolsiewicz.
Keep it plant-based.
Thanks, Dr. B. I checked and can confirm there are, in fact, links to Dr. B's histamine intolerance course, as well as a link for you to purchase your copy of the Fiber Fueled Cookbook in the episode notes. And man, we are on a roll with the shows, aren't we? Carly Bodrug from Plant U, she was here on the last episode, Dr. B today, and then Dr. Michael Greger on the next episode. That's our live show from Toronto. So if you haven't subscribed yet on Apple or Spotify, now is definitely the time to make sure that you never miss an episode. And fun fact, did you know that it was actually Dr. Bolsiewicz who introduced me to Carly? He emailed and he said that he had a friend with a new cookbook coming out and wondering whether I would be interested in having her on the show. And it turns out that friend was Carly. Carly was putting out her first cookbook, Plant U, and now she's back with another bestseller, Scrappy Cooking. So proud of her. So if you haven't heard that interview yet, I highly recommend going back one episode in the archives to check it out. Really cool innovation there from Carly with the food that ordinarily gets thrown right out. I mean, what she's able to do with what I call fruit leavens and coffee grounds is just incredible. She is so innovative in the kitchen. And you can tap into that creativity, by the way. She is so
creative in the kitchen. It's unlike anything I've ever seen from anybody in the history of ever. So cool to be with Carly. And if you want to tap into that creativity in person as well, and you're in the Seattle area, Carly and I are going to be at the Planted Expo April 20th and 21st at the Seattle Convention Center. And we're not the only ones. Robert Cheek is going to be there along with Dr. Michael Greger, Ella Majors, Doug McNish, Desiree Nelson, Nimai Delgado, and of course, the doc and chef. Karen Dugan and Dr. Jim Loomis will be there as well, along with a ton of exam roomies and thousands of Plant Forward fans. And it is going to be a fantastic weekend of health. And Exam Roomies right now, a special offer just for you. Save 15% on tickets by using the special code EXAMROOM at checkout. That is one word, Exam Room, for 15% off single day or weekend passes to the Planted Expo. Get your tickets right now at plantedlife.com or click the link in the episode notes. And then why leave? Why not make it a long weekend of health? Because Dr. Neil Barnard is going to be pulling the Power Foods Lecture Series into Seattle on April 22nd. How convenient is that? He's going to be at the Seattle Public Library's Central Branch at 7 o'clock that night. Monday, April 22nd, I hope to make a cameo as well. And then on May 16th and 17th, I'm going to be in Rochester, Minnesota at the Lifestyle Medicine Pathway to Health and Happiness Symposium. It's going to be a great event presented by the Lotus Health Foundation. And tickets and a full list of speakers to that event are available at lotushealthfoundation.org or click the link, where else? In the episode notes. And if you haven't already done so, please go ahead and follow and subscribe to the Exam Room Podcast by the Physicians Committee on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And when you do that, leave a 5-star rating and a nice review, because from time to time on the show, we love to read reviews, just like this one from an exam roommate by the name of Beachside Walker. They left this one on Apple Podcasts with the headline of "It's a Journey." They write, "This is where I gained knowledge and accumulated information for my health. It's not about one or two episodes. I believe the accumulative efforts of listening over time helps me achieve my goals of being healthy." Well, Walker, it is 100% a journey. It is not a one-time thing. Health is a lifetime event. And the journey, by the way, is always just a little sweeter on the beach. So I am so proud to be on this journey with you. Keep up the great work and trust that I am here with you every step of the way. So thank you again for the kind words and raising your health IQ with us. And if you would like for us to read your review here on the show, let us know how it's helped to raise your health IQ. Head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave that 5-star rating, and drop us a line in the review. Let us know how the show has helped you or how a plant-based diet has changed your life, improved your health. And do that, you can inspire others and make a real difference in paying it forward. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Will Bolsiewicz, the High Prince of Histamine, for being here as we continue to raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.